welcome to the Bill Barnwell Show. I'm Bill Barnwell of ESPN. We are here. It's Friday, January 19th. I'm going to say the date. I might as well get it right, and I did not. January 19th, 2018, and we are here, of course, to preview the conference championship games. Joining me to do that, frequent guest on the show, Alden Gonzalez. Mr. Gonzalez, how are you?
Doing great, Bill. How you doing?
I'm good. I am happy to have you on. We had a little bit of trouble. You were trapped in Connecticut for a brief period of time. Thankfully, we have you out of there now. You're back in California, and we can talk about these games.
Let's do it, man. I'm excited.
I'm excited, too. I think we have a couple of interesting games, and let's start with one that may be impacted by something we were not expecting, which is Patriots-Jags, and that is the mystery. That is Tom Brady's hand.
Yeah. Yeah. What's up with that, first of all? Do we know?
I don't think anyone knows, and I think that's by design. It seems like the brief history of Tom Brady's hand injury is that he appeared to injure what looks like his thumb at practice handing off. There's no details on who he was handing off to, what the context was, but it does appear to be a thumb injury. Reports from practice have suggested that he's wearing some sort of glove on his hand, which maybe he's wearing a glove because it's cold, but I mean, it does appear to be a thumb injury. So obviously that's going to impact his ability to throw the football, but how badly would it have to actually impact his ability to throw the football for you to think the Jaguars are favorites to win this game?
Oh, man, you know, Bill, to be honest, I'm kind of torn about this matchup to begin with, even if Tom Brady's hand is completely healthy. And look, I guess we can get to this a little bit later if we want to go a little bit deeper on this matchup. But I will say this. You look at just what we have here, Bill. We have four teams. Blake Bortles is on one. Case Keenum is the starting quarterback on the other. Nick Foles is the starting quarterback on the other. Of course we're going to have Brian Hoyer as the other starting quarterback, right? I mean, how the universe is kind of playing itself out.
So you would pick the Jags to win if it was Brian Hoyer a quarterback?
Yeah, I would. Okay. Of course I would. And I don't think I have the popular opinion on this, but I feel like, and I'm just kidding about the Brian Hoyer thing, but I just feel like, even though it's the Patriots, and it's so easy to just say, I mean, come on, it's freaking Tom Brady against Blake Bortles, and it's the Patriots playing in Foxborough in the playoffs, which it's obviously really hard to beat them in that scenario. I just feel like you look at this matchup, and, you know, it's all about matchups in the playoffs. Mm-hmm. And I think the Jaguars are kind of the last team the Patriots wants to see in the playoffs. I think the Patriots would have been much happier if they would have drawn the Steelers in the AFC Championship game. Because, I mean, Bill, and you know this well, Bill, I mean, if you look at the type of teams that have been able to beat the Patriots in the playoffs, they do what the Jaguars do really well. Mm-hmm. They get pressure on Tom Brady without having a blitz. Mm-hmm. They control the clock by running the ball well. We know the Jaguars can do that with Leonard Fournette. That's basically their entire offense. And they win the turnover battle. I mean, the Jaguars' defense was as good as any defense in the NFL at forcing turnovers. You saw what happened against the Steelers, the interception, the strip sack. So I'm not saying that the Jaguars are going to win this game. It's still the Patriots. It's still Tom Brady. But I just think the matchup is in their favor. I think it's a bad matchup for the Patriots.
I couldn't have said that any better myself, unfortunately. I agree with you 100%. Down to the, I still think the Patriots are going to win, but I do think the Jags have a very decent chance, and perhaps more than it might seem when you say the words Patriots and Jaguars. I mean, this is a Jaguars team that, like you said, they get pressure without blitzing, and that is true more so than anybody in football this year. 30.1% of the time they get pressure without blitzing. And I mean, there are matchups where I think the Patriots are at a serious disadvantage. It's not just Calais Campbell. It's not just one guy. It's not like this is the you know, the Raiders where it's Khalil Mack. And you think, okay, well, if we can stop Khalil Mack, we're in good shape. I mean, you're going to have Yannick Ngakoue, who's one of the best young pass rushers in football, a guy who is a strip sack machine this year.
Yeah.
Going against not Marcus Cannon, the Patriots starting right tackle, typically who's on IR, but a rotation against Lerasian Waddle and Cameron Fleming, guys who are backups in this league. And the Patriots have the best offensive line coach in football, in my opinion, in Dante Scarnecchia. But that's a really bad matchup. It's Malik Jackson versus Joe Thuney and David Andrews in the middle. I mean, there's the Jaguars have guys who are on every single play. Whether it's Campbell, whether it's Ngakoue, whether it's Jackson, whether it's Marcel Darius, whether it's Dante Fowler coming off the bench. I mean, they have guys who on every snap can win a one-on-one matchup and blow up your play. And the Patriots, their offensive line is better than it's been in years past at times. I don't know that they have the sort of, you know, offensive line that's going to be able to shut down this Jaguars front four. They might do it enough to win the game, but I don't think it's going to be a thing where they are dominant start to finish.
Yeah, and, you know, people look at the Jaguars game against the Steelers, and they're like, oh, look, the Jaguars just gave up 40-something points in the playoffs. Mm-hmm. But I think if you just look at that, I think you're discounting just the individual greatness of Ben Roethlisberger and Antonio Brown and Le'Veon Bell, who just kind of made plays that they weren't supposed to make in that game. I think the Jaguars were a lot better defensively in that game than when the numbers might have showed.
Yep.
There were some catches that Antonio Brown made that were just exceptional coverage by either A.J. Bouye or Jalen Ramsey. Mm-hmm. But, and Bill, tell me if you disagree with this, and maybe I'm making a little bit too much out of this. But one thing that I kind of noticed in that game was that the Jaguars kind of left the middle of the field open. And you saw kind of Vance McDonald kind of go off the way he did, gained a lot of chunk yardage. And I feel like, you know, that's the Patriots game. Like, they love to attack the middle of the field. And especially if, like, this hand injury actually does become an issue for Tom Brady, that's one thing that I'm kind of worried about with the Jaguars. And maybe it's just a one-game sample, but they left the middle of the field wide open, and that seems to play into the Patriots' hands a little bit.
Yeah, I think for sure that was a problem for the Jags in that game. But I wonder if it was in part, you know, a game plan thing. Not necessarily to leave it open, but kind of saying, okay, well, you know, up big, but also, like, we're not as concerned about Vance McDonald as we are about Le'Veon Bell and Antonio Brown and Juju Smith-Schuster. Whereas I think the Patriots, you know, you have to change your game plan. You can't play the same way you played against the Steelers. And I think, you know, their weapons are different. The Patriots, they have Brandon Cooks, and Brandon Cooks is excellent. Of course, you have guys like Danny Amendola, Chris Hogan, who, you know, if it's the right matchup, they're going to be able to make plays, and certainly they're going to get schemed open at times. But I mean, this is a Patriots team where their strength is going to be throwing to Rob Gronkowski and throwing to their running backs. And so Matt Bowen brought up a really interesting point to me on the show earlier this week, which was, if you're the Jaguars and you have Jalen Ramsey, who's maybe the best cornerback in football, and A.J. Bouye, who is certainly a above average, if not as good as Ramsey-level cornerback, I mean, do you put Jalen Ramsey on Gronk, especially in the red zone where Gronk is going to be an absolute weapon? Because it seems like it's a physical mismatch, but Ramsey has the size, he has the technique, he has the he has the ability to run with Gronk for sure. And then, you know, a lot of people haven't been able to overpower him this year. So I wonder if it's a thing where, you know, you have these weapons at cornerback and they're going to be some of the best players on your defense, and you have to reposition them and use them in a way that attacks the Patriots' strength, as opposed to sort of hoping that you can get by with Miles Jack and Telvin Smith, who are very good, but who, you know, aren't Jalen Ramsey in terms of coverage.
Yeah, I think that's a good point. I mean, what do teams normally do? Are you seeing a lot of kind of outside linebackers defend Gronk? How are you seeing that play out most of the time?
Yeah, I mean, it depends on whether you want to play zone or man. Like, if you want to play zone, which, you know, some teams do, if they want to, you know, try and cover most of the field and avoid making mistakes and giving up big plays, you're going to be able to have your outside linebackers there and have guys like Smith in coverage, which, again, they're good. Like, I don't want to disparage them at all. They're some of the best coverage guys in the league, but Gronk is, you know, Gronk is Gronk. Gronk is not the same as other tight ends. So, yeah, if teams are blitzing more, they tend to play a little more man. And then, you know, you can maybe play fire zones behind and have six guys in coverage. But Brady's going to pick that apart. Brady's just so good against the blitz. So, again, I think it comes back to that issue of the twin issues of, is Brady's hand healthy? And is he threatening us downfield? And then are we getting pressure with our front four? Because if you're getting pressure with your front four, you know, Brady's going to have to throw to his hot route over and over and over again, and you're going to crowd the line of scrimmage and sort of not worry about him, you know, having 4 or 5 seconds to kind of wait for someone to get open, which happened at times against Tennessee. But if you're not getting pressure, then I don't think it really matters. I mean, you can have Ramsey there. Gronk's going to be able to out-muscle just about anyone. And then even more so than Gronk, if you have Ramsey on Gronk, in man coverage and you're not getting pressure, then you're going to get Hogan open against, Aaron Colvin or whoever the fourth, fifth cornerbacks, fourth, fifth defense backs are going to be for the Jags. I mean, it's just, you're not going to have any, you're not going to have the guys holding up in coverage long enough for that because no one can do it. Even the best defense in football can do it. So there's that possibility. And I wonder if the Patriots look at the injury and look at the Jaguars' weakness, which is their run defense, given that they are, I believe, they're 26th in rush defense DVOA. And they kind of think about this the same way they thought about games against the Colts a few years ago, where they're like, we're going to run the ball 45 times if we can. We're going to get LeGarrette Blount, obviously, in the past was the guy who really was the main back against the Colts. You know, we're going to get Mike Gillisley involved or someone like that, where, you know, we're going to be a run heavy team and sort of dare the Jaguars to stop the run as opposed to worrying about our passing game so much.
Yeah, and Bill, I couldn't believe, and I'm sure you probably had the same takeaway watching that game against the Titans, just how much time Tom Brady had to throw the football. I mean, they just went into that game thinking they were going to drop back in coverage and they were just going to kind of dare Tom Brady to make throws against their defense. And that's just not how you attack Tom Brady, especially not a 40-year-old Tom Brady. ESPN Stats and Info actually have had a pretty good stat about the way that Tom Brady had been handling pressure late in the year. Last 7 games, and that includes the playoffs, when pressured, 43% completion percentage, 5.8 yards per attempt is QBR when pressured. This is 7-game sample size for Tom Brady, 35 total QBR when pressured. I mean, this is how we see it with quarterbacks when they start aging. You start applying pressure on them, and it's a lot more difficult than it was when they were younger. I think that the Jaguars are going to bring a lot of pressure in this game. I think, as we've said, they could do it without blitzing. And people want to knock Blake Bortles, but, I mean, look at the quarterbacks who have beaten Tom Brady in the playoffs. It was, Mark Sanchez beat him in the playoffs in Foxborough. Joe Flacco beat him twice in Foxborough. In the playoffs, I mean, Blake Bortles just has to kind of play mistake-free football, I think. I'm wondering, too, Bill, just maybe kind of on the Jaguars side, Leonard Fournette's ankle, kind of how much of an issue that's going to be. I mean, he wasn't at his best in the second half against the Steelers. And I think, you know, people look at this Patriots defense and, you know, they allowed the second most rushing yards per attempt in the NFL this season. Mm-hmm. But I think that's kind of a misleading stat because – second half of the year, I think we saw, and give a lot of credit to Matt Patricia because, you know, he made it work with a lot of kind of no-name guys on that defense. And as the year went on, I think that defense got stronger and stronger. I think they developed into a really good unit. I think, you know, I think they're going to make it really difficult. I think, look, and I know most teams go into games against the Jaguars with this strategy and it doesn't always work out, but I think they're going to force Blake Bortles to throw the football. If you watch Blake Bortles play quarterback, I mean, sometimes I can't stand watching Blake Bortles play quarterback. He doesn't have to read a defense, you know, especially in that last game against the Steelers. A lot of that stuff was just kind of the run-pass option, the play-action, single read. I think the Patriots are going to – I think they can do a pretty good job of taking Leonard Fournette away, especially if Leonard Fournette is not 100%. I think if they do that, they're going to take the play-action game away. And if they do that, they're going to force Blake Bortles to sit in the pocket and try to make decisions with the football and be a little bit more than a game manager. And if they do that, the Jaguars are going to be in bad shape.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think, you know, Blake Bortles, he made plays last week in the play action game. Some of them were simple throws, you know, for sure, but you got to make, you know, you make simple throws sometimes, that's going to work for you. You mentioned Mark Sanchez's name, and it was the same thing where I think when, especially late in games against the Patriots, where he would be in a two-minute drill, where he would have to just kind of make simple throws, check down to guys like LaDainian Tomlinson, he made those throws. He was able to kind of, you know, keep the game simple and move the chains. And so with Bortles, I think the Patriots, even if the talent isn't there in terms of the defense, especially in the front seven on that front end and on that defensive line, maybe more so than anywhere else, I just think they're going to be disciplined. They're going to be smart. We saw that with Marcus Mariota last week where, You know, they don't have that dominant pass rusher. Trey Flowers is probably the closest guy, but they were so right. good about staying in their rush lanes, not letting Marcus Mariota get out to run the football. They were spying him, and then their especially after Jack Conklin went down, their pass rushers were winning one-on-one, and they were sacking Mariota. So I don't think the Jaguars have a great offensive line in pass protection. I think it's fine. You know, it's not necessarily a huge weakness, but I think they're going to be disciplined. I think it's going to be tough for Bortles to get out of the pocket and make plays. And so I think that the game plan when Bortles hasn't been working has been getting him out on the edge. It's been running him, having some read option principles, having him bootleg out and, you know, eliminating half the field so he can make a throw on the run against coverage that has to adjust. And I think the Patriots, at least from a coaching perspective, are not going to see a lot of things they're not expecting on tape. I think they're going to be very well drilled on their rush lanes, on where to attack Bortles from to not get undisciplined and try and rush inside to create a play. And I do think it's going to be a struggle. I mean, the Patriots are a team that, you know, their defense, again, not that great this year by any means. Better as the season went on, for sure. But we've even seen in the playoffs, I mean, they've allowed plays here and there. The Titans did have a couple of nice drives, or at least one very solid drive early on in that game. So, you know, with the Jaguars defense, they don't need a ton of points. I mean, they scored 38 points on offense last week, but that's not going to be what's needed most of the time. If the Jaguars can get to, you know, 20 points on offense, which is not out of the question, I mean, that could be enough in this game. It certainly is not like, you know, I wouldn't expect them to win a 45-42 shootout again with the Patriots, but I just don't think that, you know, they necessarily need to do all that much to score, to have a shot at winning this game on offense.
Yeah, and look, and Blake Bortles obviously takes a lot of heat, but I mean, I thought he showed some really good poise in that game against the Steelers, especially late when it looked like the Steelers had the momentum and they were kind of coming back. I mean, the best throw he made in that game, I think, was that downfield throw to Keenan Cole, when I think it was 28-21 at that point, and it set up, Leonard Fournette running in for a touchdown. They gave him a 2-touchdown lead. You know, the Jaguars have been 4-0 in the turnover ratio in the playoffs. And that's how they're going to win. They need to win the turnover battle, and Blake Bortles just needs to make smart decisions with the football. That's what Joe Flacco did. That's what Mark Sanchez did in those games, as you mentioned. And I mean, I was impressed at the very least with the fact that Blake Bortles wasn't rattled late in that game on the road against the Steelers, game kind of slipping out of his hands. I think he did a good job of kind of managing that offense. And, you know, he may not be the most aesthetically pleasing quarterback to watch, but I think he kind of knows his role in that offense. And, you know, if he continues to show that poise, I think they'll have a chance.
Yeah. I mean, at the very least, I think they have a chance for sure. Like, it's not hard to imagine a scenario where we think, okay, well, the pass rush is great for the Jags. Tom Brady's hand is hurt. They can't throw the ball effectively downfield. The Jaguars don't make mistakes on offense. It's a low-scoring game. And that might be enough. I mean, it's not hard to construct that scenario where the Jaguars do end up winning this game. Now, of course, granted, we may be sitting here Monday morning and saying, well, at the end of the day, we made it overcomplicated, and it was Tom Brady against Blake Bortles, and, you know, and Bill Belichick took advantage of a bad quarterback and forced him to throw 4 interceptions, and it was, you know, by the second quarter, the game was over. That's also on the table in terms of possibility. So, I mean, what do you think? What do you feel most confident about in this game when it comes to Monday morning? Whether it's not saying like the outcome itself, but just like this one facet of the game is the thing that you feel is most likely to kind of stick based on what we might be looking at now in advance of the game.
This is going to be a boring answer, but it's that the Patriots are situational masters. Mm-hmm. They're not going to make the mistakes that lose this game. And I think you saw in what was kind of a seesaw game between the Steelers and Jaguars, the Steelers weren't necessarily situational masters. That onside kick comes to mind, that kind of ruined it for them. The Patriots don't make situational mistakes. They're the best at that in the NFL. They have been the best at that in the NFL for a long time. They're not going to give that game away, and I think that could be the difference.
Yeah, I don't disagree with you. I do think that, you know, I do believe in Bill Belichick having the best game plan when it comes to the postseason. I think Doug Marrone has done a good job this year with the Jags. I certainly think that he's, you know, been underrated in terms of turnarounds, just given how You know, given how many turnarounds there's been in the NFL this year and how many coaches like Sean McVay, for example, have, you know, changed things around dramatically in their first full year at the job. But I would bet we favor Belichick. I mean, I feel pretty confident about that one. So, I mean, we'll see. Obviously, Brady's hand, if it's a mangled, you know, mangled flesh and he can't throw the football at all, I mean, that changes things. But if we're assuming this is a minor injury, if it maybe affects him a little bit, but not a lot, as much as I'm tempted to pick the Jags, because I feel like it would be like it's a good chance for an upset, I do think the Patriots end up pulling this one out.
Can I just say, Bill, how funny it is, the juxtaposition of this is a Patriots team that anything, well, this is a team where anything that happens with Tom Brady mm-hmm. is like the biggest thing that's going on in this country. And we make such a huge deal about the Tom Brady thing, and everybody's talking about it and writing about it, and they're kind of looking at the gloves that he's wearing during practice and when he comes out and when he comes off. And then you have that paired with a head coach who is the least likely in the world to say anything about anything. And just to pair that, Bill Belichick just having nothing to say about the hand and never in his life ever giving you anything about any injury with his player, especially mm-hmm. with Tom Brady, matched with us making such a big deal and us being so thirsty for answers about Tom Brady's hand, I just think the comedic value in that is fantastic.
It does seem like the two things might be related. I will say, as I go to ESPN.com right now, the top headlines box in the top right, story number one is Belichick barely addresses Brady injury. Number two is Rude Boy, All-Star MB dismisses Rihanna, which we can get to later on if you're so inclined. Number Please. Three, Brady authorized Super Bowl ring on auction. So two of the three top stories, top headlines involve Tom Brady. So as much as we talk about the quarterbacks being missing this year, some guys being injured, unavailable, we are seeing that Tom Brady still manages to dominate the headlines.
We're Bill, gonna... fourth quarter, Blake Bortles, Brian Hoyer. You heard it here first.
I mean, it's not unprecedented. Think about that first time. That first time Tom Brady was in the AFC Championship game, he got hurt and got replaced by Drew Bledsoe. And Drew Bledsoe, who'd been benched early in the year, of course, came back to lead the Patriots to the Super Bowl. So
I forgot about that.
It would be a fitting riposte, or not riposte, what's the word? I'm trying to pretend that it's like the end of Brady's career and he's going to retire if they win a Super Bowl, which I don't think is true. So, I think they're going to be better off if they have Tom Brady in there as opposed to Brian Hoyer, but we will see. Certainly, fascinating matchup to come there, perhaps is right. All right, we're going to hit a break, come back with more Bill Barnwell Show here in a moment. First, guys, I don't know if you've been paying attention to the NFL, but a lot of jobs are about to come open for the teams who are playing in these conference championship games. It looks like the Patriots are going to lose both offensive coordinator Josh McDaniels, defensive coordinator Matt Patricia. Vikings probably going to lose offensive coordinator Pat Shurmur. All of those guys are going to get head coaching jobs, which means we'll have three coordinator positions open. And I don't know what Bill Belichick and Mike Zimmer use to fill those roles. They're smart. They have Rolodexes, I'm sure. NFL coaches are pretty antiquated. I don't think they are necessarily going to look through their cell phone. They probably have those paper Rolodexes. But I have a suggestion. And the only reason I'm suggesting it is that it's worked for so many different companies in so many different industries. And that is using ZipRecruiter to find qualified candidates for those coordinator jobs and for whatever job you're trying to fill in your industry, because ZipRecruiter will take your job and post it on over 100 of the web's leading job boards with just one click. You know Bill Belichick's not sitting there spending 20 minutes creating a profile on 18 different job sites to post this job. You know he's not like formatting stuff in Microsoft Word. He wants one click and then he's going to move on to whatever team he's playing in the preseason next year. ZipRecruiter does the work for Bill Belichick and for you because they actively look for the most qualified candidates and invite them to apply. So you're never going to miss a great match. And that's why 80% of employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate through the site in just one day. And it doesn't matter how big your business is, how small your business is, ZipRecruiter works with businesses of all sizes in all industries to find the most qualified job candidates with immediate results. And even better, if you're the Patriots trying to save some money, maybe you have a quarterback you need to pay because you sent your other quarterback away. You need to maybe, I don't want to allege some under the table payments. I feel like that's not appropriate and not fair, but maybe you want to give Tom Brady an extension just to make him feel better after the whole Jimmy Garoppolo thing. Well, you can save money by posting your jobs on ZipRecruiter for free by using my promo code, which is Barnwell, B-A-R-N-W-E-L-L. Go to ziprecruiter.com/Barnwell and you'll post your job for free on ZipRecruiter today. Again, ziprecruiter.com/Barnwell. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. All right. Welcome back to the Bill Barnwell Show. I'm Bill Barnwell of ESPN, joined again by Alden Gonzalez. We are recapping the divisional round game. So you brought up a good point during the break, Alden. We forgot to talk about the owner of the Patriots who will be in the press box on Sunday in Foxborough. I'm not talking about the Kraft family.
Oh, yeah, of course. Tom Coughlin. He is the owner of the Patriots in many respects. I think his looming presence in this game, I think, is enough to rattle Bill Belichick and Tom Brady. What do you think?
I think that is entirely plausible. I, as someone who, like, you know, was living in New York for, not living, but for a fair amount of the time, or living near New York as far as Tom Coughlin's reign over the Giants and how he was, like, so close to being fired, or how the Giants had quit on him seemingly every year they didn't win the Super Bowl. It's always fun to think of him as, like, this coach who was pretty good for a while, got run out of New York for a head coach that ended up being much worse, but now is like, well, he's the master of Bill Belichick. He has the secret to beating Bill Belichick, which is really like, you know, have David Tyree make an incredible catch.
Right. Right.
I will say, if I was the Jaguars, would I name David Tyree honorary captain and send him out for, like, the coin toss? Yes, I would.
That would be the best. There's no coach who's had better success against Bill Belichick than Tom Coughlin, right? Like, in the history of the NFL. Right?
I can't think of Tom Coughlin.
And it's just, it's so crazy to me that I know Tom Coughlin's not coaching the Jaguars now, but he had a big hand in kind of the way this roster was constructed, in the way this defense was constructed, in terms of the guys that they signed in free agency, the guys that they picked up in the draft. And it's, I mean, it's pretty amazing that here we are now in the AFC Championship game, and you got kind of Tom Coughlin lording over the Jaguars team that's going to try to go into Foxborough and do what Tom Coughlin's Giants teams did so well in a couple of Super Bowls. And look, like we talked about Bill earlier, you know, what's the key to beating Tom Brady, especially on the road in the playoffs? It's getting pressure on him, and that's what Tom Coughlin's Giants teams did good. I mean, Tom Coughlin's Giants teams did that better than anybody else, but I don't know how much of that was Tom Coughlin and how much of that was, you know, Michael Strahan, O.C. Umenyura, these guys that are just really, really good inside.
That's the thing, is right. Like, when the Rams hired Steve Spagnuolo, it's like, well, I mean, you know, like, sure, like, great game plan, but also it's like, hey, Hall of Fame defensive end, just go rush the quarterback, try and get a sack.
Right.
Like, it was like rush four and drop seven into coverage. Like, you know, that's smart. Like, it's good that you had those guys, but, like, you're not doing it without those guys. So, I mean, it's interesting that he has a very similar team in terms of style to the team that he had with the Giants there. So, I would love to see, like, Tom Coughlin win and Bill Belichick just go on, like, a rant about how he hates Tom Coughlin after the game.
You know what would be great? You remember when Pedro Martinez lost to the Yankees and he had that press conference afterwards and he said that the Yankees are his daddy?
Mm-hmm.
What are the chances that we could get Bill Belichick to say that if he loses to the Jaguars on Sunday?
That would be the most amazing thing. That would be so perfect. Oh my God, I wish. I would chip in $100 to that fund if I could.
Yeah, just maybe the frustration just forces him to go completely out of character and we see a side of Bill Belichick that we've never seen before.
I can't wait for, like, Bill Belichick to retire and just not, like, literally just not ever give a speech on record again.
Really?
I mean, like, do you think he's gonna become a member of the media if he retires?
No. Come on. There could never be a worse fit.
Yeah, that's true.
I don't think he's ever retiring anyway. I think he's gonna coach at least 100.
God, I can only imagine the 67-year-old Tom Brady and 100-year-old Bill Belichick still winning the AFC East. Let's move on, though. We got another game to talk about here. Of course, Vikings and Eagles, two teams, again, built in a very similar way. Teams that are going to get pressure with their front four. Teams who have very solid defense up and down the lineup. Teams that have a bunch of useful receivers. And teams who have a question at quarterback. And, of course, Case Keenum has been very solid this year. I think he's obviously played up to a higher level than Nick Foles. But last week, we saw what some might say was a very solid performance from Nick Foles. He had 23 completions, I think, on 30 attempts. And it was a game plan, I felt like, and I heard about this for Monday, that was really built around his strengths. I mean, it was all 23 of his completions were within 15 yards of the line of scrimmage, so those short passes. He had that one bomb on the first play that was badly underthrown into the wind that ended up drawing pass interference, but everything else, short completions, quick throws, RPOs, you know, plays that were, you know, he would have ran with Chip Kelly. In a lot of cases during his success with Chip Kelly a few years ago in Philadelphia, where, you know, he was really trying to get the ball out as quickly as possible, trying to read a linebacker, not sort of being stuck in the pocket and waiting for the pass rush to get to him, not waiting for him to read coverages and make mistakes, just let's get the ball out, let's get the ball in the hands of our receivers, let's move the chains, let's stay on schedule, and hope that we're going to eat up a lot of clock.
Yeah, and you made this great point yesterday, Bill. I was watching Scott Van Pelt on SportsCenter, and you were on with them. You talked about how Nick Foles' strength is to throw short and throw to his tight ends, but that the Vikings are just so good at taking that away, and how this game may come down to Nick Foles maybe having to make some plays downfield. And look, I think the difference in this game is the quarterbacks. I know Nick Foles had a nice game last weekend, but And the interesting thing about it too is I think if you would have gone going into this year, I think a lot of people would have identified Nick Foles as the better backup when compared to Case Keenum. But I think the difference in this game, the difference in this matchup going into it, is that you have a situation with the Vikings where Case Keenum has had almost an entire season as a starting quarterback in that offense. And you've seen Pat Shurmur has done a great job of kind of tailoring his offense to fit Case Keenum's strengths, which most of it comes as kind of his athleticism. But he's had an entire year to do that. He's had an entire year to just kind of tweak that offense to bring the best out of Case Keenum. We're kind of on the other side of that. You have Nick Foles who didn't step into the offense until the final 3 weeks of the regular season. And, you know, as opposed to Doug Peterson being able to kind of tailor an entire offense to fit Nick Foles, I think what he's had to do is kind of throw out basically half of the playbook because all of a sudden Nick Foles is thrust into the starting lineup and you just got to make something work going into the playoffs. I think it's a much more difficult scenario. I think the fit with Case Keenum in that Vikings offense is a lot better. I think we've gotten to the point in Case Keenum's kind of ascension this year that he's an asset to that offense at this point, whereas Nick Foles is kind of debilitating a little bit for that offense because they're so limited with Nick Foles compared to Carson Wentz. And I think that's the key here. I think the Vikings have kind of rallied around Case Keenum, and I think that offense is flowing really well with Case Keenum to the point where they could never take him out. Whereas with Nick Foles and the Eagles, I think they're still trying to work it out, and this setting against this defense is not the ideal time to still be kind of trying to work it out.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's totally fair. I will say, I found it interesting that in the final couple plays, final couple series for the Vikings in against the Saints when they were trailing in both cases on the final two drives, they really did struggle to move the football. Now, granted, we saw it happen. Case Keenum had two big completions, one of which was a out to Adam Thielen that was off his back foot that Adam Thielen made a leaping catch on. It would have been pass interference
anyway.
Amazing
catch.
Right. But I was like, okay, well, that's not really the most promising throw. And then the final play, obviously, I think a good throw from Keenum on that deep out to Stephon Diggs. Nothing wrong with the throw by any means, but I will say that it wasn't like he threw him open for a 60-plus yard touchdown. A lot of that was Stephon Diggs and the Saints defense on that play. So I would be worried. I think if this is a game that is close or the Vikings are ahead, I think Case Keenum is a much better quarterback. I think the Vikings are in great shape. I think it's very promising for them. If they get down by 7 points or 10 points, and this is true for the Eagles as well, but if the Eagles get an early lead, if they get a turnover, if they do something on special teams, if they get, you know, a 7 point lead, even a 10 point lead, you know, in the first half, I would just be worried about the Vikings throwing a catch up. They didn't look as effective in that 2 minute drill as I would have hoped for. So, I think they want to be in situations where they have the threat of the running game. When they ran the ball over 500 times this year, I mean, they were a team that, even given the fact that they won a bunch of games, they were very run intensive, and tried to keep Case Keenum in very good situations. I think it's possible he makes plays, but I wouldn't want to be in a situation where I have to rely on Case Keenum to make throws for us to win.
No, and you're absolutely right, Bill, because I was watching that game against the Saints, and what I was thinking when they got down inside of 2 minutes was, this is not what you want as a Vikings team, because this is not Case Keenum's strengths. And when he starts trailing, you start to see the reasons why this guy got passed up, why he wasn't drafted, why he was on practice squads. And it's because he's not a big quarterback who could see over the line of scrimmage. He doesn't have the big arm that could just kind of pick you apart from 30-plus yards away. And so when they're trailing and he's got to sit in the pocket and pick apart a defense, I think that's when they're at a disadvantage. There's no doubt about that. And I think that's going to be the key to this game, is for the Vikings to just kind of pull ahead like they did against the Saints, but stay ahead in this game. And look, you know, all the praise that Case Keenum's gotten this season, very well deserved. But I think a lot of times we discount the value that Stephon Diggs and Adam Thielen bring. I mean, yeah. The luxury that it is to be able to throw to these guys, the amount of plays that Adam Thielen and Stephon Diggs make for Case Keenum, and we saw it show up in that game against the Saints, especially late. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's so big. I mean, but that's another big difference in this game. Those guys are just amazing. I think they're the best wide receiver combo in the NFL this season. And I think he's going to continue to make plays with those guys.
Yeah, I don't disagree with you on any of that. And I think if you're the Eagles, you know, the secondary, especially their cornerbacks, are not the strength of that team. They've held their own. They've been solid this year, and they made plays when they needed to against the Falcons, thinking about, of course, that, you know, the two Julio Jones plays on first down and fourth down in that final series. But I do think the best way for the Eagles to shut down the Vikings in this game is going to be stopping the run, which I think they can do, and then also giving Rashad Hill some trouble at right tackle, because Mike Remmers was starting a tackle. They moved him inside after his free agent deal this year, moved him to guard later in the year. Rashad Hill starting at right tackle. I mean, there's a lot of mismatches there for the Eagles. You have Brandon Graham, who's going to play on that side. He was great against the run, also a very solid pass rusher. You're going to have Chris Long on that side, Derek Barnett, the first-round pick, on that side. You know, they're going to be able to rotate guys every single snap who are going to be pass rushing threats if the Vikings want to throw the football. So I would be concerned about Rashad Hill holding up against a very deep and very effective Eagles defensive line.
You know, I'll tell you this, Bill. You know, the Rams played, the Rams had a really tough schedule over the second half, and they mm-hmm. saw the Vikings. They saw the Eagles. They saw the Saints. And then they obviously saw the Falcons in the playoffs. A lot of Rams players told me that the Vikings defense was the best defense that they faced all year, and wow. that it wasn't even close.
Wow.
And I was surprised by that too. But I think the Vikings did such a great job, with their front seven of just kind of taking away the run game, of taking away Todd Gurley, taking away those easy outlet throws for Jared Goff, and just mm-hmm. kind of putting him, taking away the play action as well, and kind of forcing him to make plays down the field. They did that better than any other team that they faced this season. And, you know, I was thinking about that recently, just going into this matchup and looking at the way that Nick Foles operates in this offense. And mm-hmm. Nick Foles had a dreadful first half, I thought, last weekend. I think he had a lot of plays that could have been interceptions. I think yeah. about that tip ball mm-hmm. near the end of the first half that should have been an interception that I think set up a field goal.
It did.
Before the time ran out. And then you saw in the second half a lot of that run-pass option stuff. And as you've mentioned, not a lot of downfield throws, a lot of short outlet throws. Mm-hmm. And I just feel like the Vikings are going to be able to take that away. I know it's easier said than done, but I think the Vikings defense can do a really good job of taking that away. And if you got to throw downfield against them with those safeties, you're going to be in for a long day, especially outdoors.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's part of the problem is that, you know, if you're Mike Zimmer, what Mike Zimmer does really well, what he does over and over again, is he wants to put his linebackers, Eric Kendricks and Anthony Barr, right over the A-gaps. He wants to threaten the quarterback before the snap is even taken. And then, you know, either they're going to drop off and play coverage. They're going to, one of them's going to rush depending on which way the center turns, and the other one's going to drop back into coverage. I mean, it's going to be a lot of confusion for Nick Foles diagnosing it before the snap. And he has Jason Kelce, who's going to help matters, and he's a great center. They have good guards. You know, they have, they're good in protection over the middle. But you're going to have to be making decisions in a snap. And one of the ways you beat the Vikings by doing that is by making them scared that you can throw the ball downfield. And the Eagles have Alshon Jeffrey, who can be a big body downfield. They have Torrey Smith, who can outrun people. I mean, they have guys who can make plays downfield, but like you said, outdoors, possibility of wind, possibility of bad weather. Of course, we don't know yet. It's still a couple of days away. It's hard to imagine Nick Foles making that big play that he missed on the opening play of the game against the Falcons, where maybe if he hits that, maybe the Falcons are worried about him throwing downfield and they don't have to.
Yeah.
You know, they're not going to crowd the line of scrimmage, and they're going to be able to make more plays in the first half, but it's just tough to see Nick Foles making those throws and making the Vikings regret, you know, manning up those receivers on the outside and crowding the box and trying to take away the running game and trying to take away those RPOs. So, I'll be really intrigued to see what the Eagles game plan looks like and how they respond to that pressure. And I mean, the other thing is, I mentioned the Vikings problems on the right side with Rashad Hill. The Eagles have Hal Vitae at left tackle, their swing tackle with Jason Peters out for the year. And he's going up against Everson Griffin, which I mean, that's a mismatch.
Yeah.
You know, and so I think if you're Foles and you are going to have those plays where you're going to go play action, you're going to go with a five step drop and try to get something downfield, well, you might have Everson Griffin in your face when that happens. So I think the Eagles, they might need a play downfield or two plays downfield, but they're going to have to pick their shots because I don't think they can try five or six of those passes and get away with it.
Do you worry about, and I think sometimes we make way too much of this stuff, but do you worry about the letdown from the Vikings after such an emotional win like that?
Yeah, I mean, it's plausible, right? You know, you have to feel some sense of victory from what you've accomplished. And I think about, well, be a good example. I think about that Seahawks game a few years ago where the Seahawks had the Beast Quake and they upset the Saints at home, and then they came out the next week and they just laid an egg against the Bears. Yeah. I mean, the Bears were, you know, they were not as good of a team as the Bears that year, but you think about that, it's just like they really didn't have the, you know, they just didn't have the ability to respond to that game. They just, it was the best they could do. And I mean, you know, the Vikings are a very good team, but they're on the road, which, you know, it's very different than playing at home, of course. I mean, it could be a situation where, you know, you end up exposing some of the weaknesses with the Vikings. They run the ball super frequently. They're not a great running team, though. They're an okay running team. You know, that defense, maybe Nick Foles make a couple plays downfield, but I don't think they're perhaps as susceptible to it because they have been to the playoffs before. This is a team that's been together for 3 or 4 years now. So, I mean, granted, that was a very emotional win for them, and it was their first win as with this core in the postseason. But I do think they've had that feeling before. So I think they're maybe less susceptible than a team that hasn't been to the playoffs and hasn't struggled with losing in the playoffs before.
You sounded surprised when I told you that some Rams players said the Vikings defense was the best defense they've faced. Who do you kind of give the edge to here? Because I feel like they're very, I mean, they're as close as you could get defensively. Yeah. They're pretty similar defensively. Do you give an edge to one side over the other? Because that's a hard one for me.
Yeah, I would say Minnesota just slightly. I just think they match up a little better with the Eagles. I think if it were a different offense is involved, maybe I'd pick the Eagles. But I do think if you're playing the Vikings, you want that front four, and the Eagles definitely have the front four to pressure. But you want maybe you want better cornerbacks. You want cornerbacks who are going to be able to challenge those wide receivers a little better. And I do think you look at that combo, like you said, of Stephon Diggs and Adam Thielen. That's the best wide receiver combo in football this year. So I would like, you know, cornerbacks who can maybe make more plays in the football, who can, you know, who are more physical perhaps and a little more talented. And they're going to play up. I mean, Jim Schwartz does a great job of coaching his cornerbacks, but I think in this matchup specifically, I would take the Vikings. But do you feel the same way?
Yeah, I do. I just, and not by much, but,
yeah.
I just, Harrison Smith to be. I mean, I loved watching Harrison Smith this year. I think he was the best safety in the NFL this season. I think he's still criminally underrated, and I think he's going to have a real big impact in this game.
Yeah. I mean, we'll see. I mean, Anderson Dejo, fellow safety, has a concussion, was laid out on a blindside hit. On a route combo, not on a pick play, I don't think on purpose, but maybe it looks like he's probably going to play, but maybe that's a point of contention for the Vikings, where they're not deep at safety behind him by any means.
Right.
I mean, that could be a thing. They've been very healthy on defense all year, haven't really had to struggle outside of the injury that kept Sharif Floyd out for the year. You know, they've been such a deep team on defense that the safety is maybe the spot where they can afford to lose somebody, but I think this is just going to be a defensive struggle. I mean, it's going to come down to one or two plays. I can't imagine. Maybe I'm wrong. You know, we saw what happened last week with the Jags, where they scored 45 points, 38 on offense. But I just think this is a game where we're going to have two cautious teams. Don't want to turn the ball over. See a bunch of punts. Going to see a lot of, you know, 4-yard completions on 3rd and 9. A lot of teams, you know, sort of waiting for the other one to make a mistake. And I just think that, look at what the Vikings have done this year. I just think they're less likely to make a mistake than the Eagles are.
Yeah. No, I still can't believe that we have Nick Foles and Case Keenum taking off in a playoff game.
These not just any playoff game.
Same Rams team. You know, in a conference championship game, Nick Foles and Case Keenum facing off. I just can't. I know. I'm sorry. Just like kind of taking a step back. Mm-hmm. Like just, wow, this is like really a thing. And then Sam Bradford's there too. This is the Jeff Fisher Bowl.
Should Jeff Fisher, I mentioned the coin toss earlier, should Jeff Fisher throw out the ceremonial coin in this game?
He needs to flip the coin. No doubt.
He mentioned this earlier, sure, that people should reconsider his impact on the league by virtue of these players, including Jared Goff, who you mentioned, succeeding. Does that change it for you? I mean, do you think we should be thinking about Jeff Fisher differently, given how these guys have had, you know, not Nick Foles really, but Keenum and Jared Goff have had breakout seasons this year?
Wait, what do you mean think about him differently?
Like instead of thinking about him as like a disastrous head coach, about someone who might deserve a little more credit than perhaps he got after being fired last year?
No, I think this is the complete opposite of that. I think everything that has happened this year, and look, it's never this simple, but I think everything that's happened this year has just served as a complete indictment on Jeff Fisher. I mean, you look, the ESPN's NFL Twitter account ran a graphic the other day of Case Keenum and Nick Foles' numbers with Jeff Fisher compared to without Jeff Fisher. And they were jarring.
Yeah.
and just, I mean, it's almost comical at this point that you have Sean McVay take over the same Rams team that Jeff Fisher had last year and he's going to become coach of the year. Jared Goff is going to go to the Pro Bowl this year. And now you have Nick Foles and Case Keenum in the conference championship game, being very more than serviceable quarterbacks for teams that are one win away from the Super Bowl. It's all an indictment on Jeff Fisher, and it's not all his fault. And I think Jeff Fisher's greatest shortcoming as a head coach was that he never empowered innovative offensive minds.
Yeah.
Jeff Fisher came from a defensive background. And he never kind of paired himself with an offensive coordinator who could make it work, or he just never let those offensive coordinators kind of run the offense and never empowered them. And that was the problem. I mean, you look at that 2015 season, you had Frank Cignetti and you had Rob Boris as the offensive coordinators for those teams, and they never did anything with Nick Foles and Case Keenum. And look, they lacked talent too. I mean, they didn't have – Case Keenum wasn't throwing to Stephon Diggs or Adam Thielen. Yeah. Nick Foles didn't have Alshon Jeffrey. But, you know, this entire season is just a complete indictment on Jeff Fisher. The aesthetics look really bad, and it's why, you know, Jeff Fisher may not be a head coach again.
I don't think he should be. Granted, you know, maybe I'm just naive, and maybe he secretly, you know, planned this whole – all process, and the Rams are going to be better the moment he left, but it does seem like he maybe wasted some talent during his time in Los Angeles. So, Alden, are you taking the Vikings in this game? Do you have the Eagles? I mean, what's your prediction?
I think the Vikings. I hate making predictions just because, like, we never really know. But
of course,
I think as I said it to start this segment about Eagles-Vikings. I think the difference in this game is how the Vikings offense has already found a good fit with Case Keenum and how the Eagles are still trying to figure it out with Nick Foles. I think the Eagles offense is more limited with Nick Foles and the Vikings offense is limited with Case Keenum. I know the Vikings are going to be on the road. I know they're coming off that emotional high of how that game ended against the Saints, but I just think I don't think Case Keenum versus Nick Foles is close. And we tend to compare them because they came into the season as backups and they're sort of career backups. But I think at this point, Case Keenum has surpassed Nick Foles because of the way he fits into his own offense.
I'm going Patriots, Vikings as well for a lot of the same reasons. I would be intrigued by a Jaguars-Eagles Super Bowl. I'm not going to lie. I think Foles-Bortles would be wildly entertaining, but I'm going to go with you. I just think that Eagles, you know, would not surprise me if the Eagles won, would not surprise me if the Jags won. I don't think either of these games are necessarily likely to be blowouts, but I do think that this is just a deeper Vikings team, more top-level talent, and I think that Mike Zimmer is a very underrated coach, so I'm going to go Vikings-Patriots in the Super Bowl, which I'll be exciting. I'll be excited to come watch it. But Alden Gonzalez, where can people check out more of your work?
You could check me out on the Rams Clubhouse page on ESPN, and you can follow me on Twitter at @Alden_Gonzalez. And please, Bill, I don't need to see 60 more minutes of Blake Bortles. I don't need it. I don't want it in the Super Bowl. I know it's sacrilegious to root for the Patriots. I just don't need more Blake Bortles in my life. I'm sorry.
I thought you were going to say I don't need to see more tweets about about Mike Tomlin on my Twitter timeline.
Just no more Blake.
No more Blake. Hashtag no more Blake. All right, Mr. Gonzalez, thank you so much for coming on.
Thank you, Bill. Appreciate it.
All right. Thanks to my guest, Alden Gonzalez. Wonderful show today. I felt like, maybe you disagree, but I thought it was very solid. Love having Mr. Gonzalez on the show. We are going to be back on Monday. You're not going to be surprised. We are recapping the conference championships games. Conference championship games, I should say, on Monday. And then, I don't know, maybe I'll have a show later on in the week. Maybe we'll have a show the following week. I suspect we will preview the Super Bowl at some point, either on one show, either on two shows. I have a bunch of ideas, but of course, more football coming here on the Bill Barnwell Show. So thanks so much for listening.